And our next session is, in fact, handing over to Hans in terms of our technical, says me rapidly trying to find the agenda, in terms of the board and IFRS foundation activities. So Hans, Henry and Peter, I think, are going to take us through a few of the bits of what's been going on, of the very significant matters that have been going on. This is, of course, a standing agenda item. You've got a background paper in front of you, and in fact, I've already talked about a couple of those achievements. But really, Hans, hand over to you.
Yes, thank you, Joanna. Let me start by introducing a couple of new faces around the table. First with our latest acquisition, Nili Shah, our new technical director here to my left. She joined us from the US SEC at the beginning of the month. She was there the deputy chief accountant of the Division of Corporate Finance. You know, the SEC oversees 500 foreign listers that use IFRS, so there's plenty of IFRS work to be done at the SEC. Nili knows IFRS very well, and she, in her previous capacity of working for PwC, she worked both in the UK and in the US, where one of her focus areas was helping companies prepare for IFRS adoption. Then three new board members. First of all, Ann Tarka. Where is Ann? Ah, there she is, next to Nili. Ann is a former and still academic. She joined from the University of Western Australia in July, and she was also a research director at the Australian Accounting Standards Board. She has worked for the ISB before as an academic fellow, so many of you will know of her already. And so we have now two academics on the board, and you may have noticed that has really added to the depth of our conversation. Then from China, Zhenqiao Lu, familiar to many of you. He comes from the Chinese Ministry of Finance, he has also worked for the ISB in the past as a staff member, and he was also a member of ASEF, and we have high expectations of him. And then we have Nick Anderson, our first buy-side investor. He joined us in September. He comes from Janus Henderson Investors here in the UK, and he brings a lot of very good investor experience to the board table. So now we are back to 14, with a very good mix of professional and geographical backgrounds. So it's a good feeling to have a complete board again. Then let me tell you a little bit about the latest technical developments. And it has already been said by Joanne, the biggest development since our last meeting was the publication of IFRS 17, the new insurance contracts standard. I truly believe of all the big four standards that we have produced in the last 6 years, this is the most important one. All the others are, of course, also extremely important, but they are improvements over what we already had, whereas this is truly an entirely new standard, replacing what are, in effect, all national standards, which are widely divergent and often very much outdated. We published a detailed effect analysis alongside the standard. I can really recommend you to try to read it. It is very readable, and it really shows what the improvements are of this standard, that this standard brings over and above the existing standards. And just last week, there was an important publication of the IMF, which really demonstrates how important this standard is in the Global Financial Stability Report. They have a special section on insurance in which they show considerable concern about the insurance industry in the current low interest rate environment. They state that despite risk-sensitive capital requirements, at least one-third of U.S. and European insurers' bond portfolios now are below investment-grade rating, and that used to be about 5%. So in the search for yield, insurers have really been forced to go into more risky investments. They also say that, make clear that investors are concerned. Half of the U.S. and European insurers have now a price-to-book ratio which is below pre-crisis, still below pre-crisis levels, and below one in many cases. The report also states that if the low interest rate environment persists, investment returns could continue to decrease for the next decade, and a situation that would leave life insurers in the Netherlands, Germany, Sweden, and Norway facing negative spreads in the next couple of years, within a few years. Discount rates used to value future liabilities differ between insurers. That is also very clear in our effect analysis. And they are often higher than the market risk-free rates, resulting in an underestimation of liabilities. They state that risk assessments in the insurance sector suffers from opaque and heterogeneous financial disclosure and deficiencies in the accounting and regulatory regimes. And their conclusion, IMF's conclusion, is that policymakers must continue to strengthen regulatory frameworks and increase reporting transparency. And I really think that this underlines the urgency of the standard. And even if everything goes according to plan, it will be in place in 2021 in all of the world, most of the world. Many countries are already making preparations. Let's hope that that is the case and that it will be in time. Let me see. Yes, you may have noticed that a bit in the following the previous discussion that I have given a speech in Brussels last month on the role of the ISB in wider corporate reporting. There's a lot of confusion about wider corporate reporting in general and also about the role that the ISB should play in that. And what I have tried to make clear in that speech is that our remit will remain financial reporting, and it will be financial reporting for an audience of capital market actors, for investors and creditors. However, it's also increasingly clear that lots of elements of long-term value creation by companies are not immediately captured in the financial statements. They are often intangibles, which are not adequately captured in financial statements, or it is about things like business models, the business environment, risks, and those cannot be, by definition, almost not be captured in the financial statements. So there is a lot of need for what we could call other financial information or broader financial information. And that is the reason why in 2010 we created the management commentary practice statement. These issues have to be discussed in the narrative of that accompanies the financial statements. And that is why a narrative in an annual report is very important and why we created that management commentary practice statement in 2010. We are currently discussing in the board if it isn't time for us to update that practice statement. A lot has happened between 2010 and now. There is a lot more talk about integrated reporting. There's a lot more talk about sustainability issues. We are never going to create sustainability standards, but for some industries like the mining industry or the car industry, sustainability issues are obviously extremely important for long-term value creation, so they might have a place in the narrative. And those are all issues that are not adequately captured in the current practice statement for the management commentary, and that's why it could be a good idea for us to take a closer look at this. Board still has to decide, but that's what we're talking about. Well, about big data, we just discussed that. I have nothing further to add to that. Then, finally, brief word on research that we have done on our perception by the outside world. The trustees have commissioned earlier this year this research to be done. An independent agency conducted research into stakeholders' perceptions of us as an organization, and we had a lot of helpful comments, mostly positive, about the integrity of our due process and the outreach that we did. Critical comments about lengthiness or lack of timeliness, which we as a board fully share and which we are trying to get a grip on. You will get a further presentation, more detailed presentation on this research, but I think it was very helpful, and I would like to thank all of those of you who are members of the Advisory Council and who participated for the input that you have provided. So I would like to keep it limited to this and give the floor to Henry. I would like to specifically thank one of your members, Surya Subramanian, for his support that he gave to us in organizing a conference, IFRS conference, that we organized 2 weeks ago in Dubai. Very well done. So Peter and Henry?
I'm going to go first. So what I'm going to do is give you a quick rundown the work programme. If you want to follow this, it's in the table that's in Agenda Paper 3, and I'm going to try and pick out a couple of highlights. So first of all, in the first section on standard-setting projects, the two main items there are the conceptual framework. We're going through the drafting on that with the aim of finalising that and publishing that in the first quarter next year. Secondly, on rate regulation, we've been discussing that intensively. It's been discussed a lot with the board and with the Accounting Standards Advisory Forum, and we've got a meeting of our consultative group at the end of next week to take us further forward on that. The next thing I'd like to do is to pick up the projects under the label of better communication, which appears in several places in this table. So the first thing is I should mention the practice statement on materiality, making materiality judgments, which was published in September, together with a small exposure draft proposing some amendments, some tweaks really to the definition of materiality. The next element is better communication, the document that was published in the last week or so, which has got some case studies designed to help people get to a better place in disclosure and to think more critically about how they present their disclosures. Then we have two projects on the research agenda linked to this theme of best communication. There's the principles of disclosure, for which we issued a discussion paper in March. The comment deadline was in October, at the beginning of October. And a check before I came, we've had 99 comment letters on that so far, so we'll be looking at that over the next few months. On primary financial statements, which as Hans said in the previous session, it's quite important, I think, in terms of thinking about how financial statements are formatted. The board is working up some ideas there, looking particularly at the format of the performance statements and the subtotals that we might find in that statement. And so there we're working towards a discussion paper next year. The other element of better communication I should mention, again, it came up in the previous session, of course, is the taxonomy, which the board has been integrating more closely into the standard setting work and has been taking more ownership of the setting of the taxonomy and the updating of the taxonomy as well. So that's the board is much more involved in that than it was a few years ago. Turning to the other research projects, so we've got four other active research projects. Financial instruments with characteristics of equity is in the drafting stage, and we're aiming to issue a discussion paper in the first part of next year. On goodwill and impairment, again, that's been a fairly intensive round of discussions, which is continuing. And it probably won't surprise you to know that the views on that topic are still very mixed. And I think the way forward is still probably to emerge at the moment on that one. On dynamic risk management, the board has been having a series of education sessions over the last 6 months or so, I guess, which is really designed to tell it how dynamic risk management works in practice. The next attraction that's coming for the board is to start seeing what solutions might be to the accounting issues, and that's going to be starting up over the next month or so. And finally, on the research projects, I should mention business combinations under common control, which is a project that's been dormant for a bit over a year, but restarted in September, and the board had a kind of catch-up session in September, and we'll now start to work through the issues starting with the next board meeting this month. The next thing I want to mention is the post-implementation review of the fair value measurement standard, IFRS 13. So just to remind you of the process, the board went through an initial phase where it was trying to identify where possible areas were that might need investigation. And then following that, we issued a request for information in March, I think, no, May maybe, to get more information on particular areas. And what the board was particularly interested in there was not so much getting people's opinions, but trying to get more facts and evidence about the scope of the particular problems that are identified in the request for information. The comment deadline for that was in September, and we had 68 responses to that, which is a bit less probably than you'd expect for a major standard. And I guess that reflects the slightly different focus of that exercise, which is trying to gather more evidence rather than necessary views and reactions. Then the next thing I wanted to mention is the pipeline. Now, to remind you what this is about, when the board did the agenda consultation that finished last year, the board was very keen to have to really focus its work and not work on too many things at once, both to make sure the board's capacity wasn't diluted, but I think more importantly to make sure that stakeholders weren't overwhelmed by having too many things going on at once. So the board was very concerned really to keep that focus. So what it did was it set up a limited number of research projects that it was working on at the time, of course a limited number of major standard setting projects, but it also tried to identify the research projects that it felt it could realistically do a substantial amount of work on over the next 5 years or so through to about 2021. So the pipeline is a list of 8 projects which are not active projects at the moment, but which the board felt last year it would have a reasonable chance of doing substantial work on by about 2021. And by implication that it wouldn't have the capacity to take up other major projects, research projects over that time, unless something else was thrown out of the way to make room for it. Now, so far, the board hasn't started up any of those 8 projects in the pipeline. We have discussions with the board probably about three or four times a year to see whether we should think about it. I think we're moving towards the stage where over the next few months we should probably start thinking about opening up one or two. At this stage, there isn't one, I would say, that's sort of at the top of the list and is the number one candidate that is clearly going to be the next one the board will look at. But the board will continue to discuss that over the next few months. But just to remind you, that list of 8 projects is really designed to last over the next 5 years, well, 4 years from now. It's not designed to be 8 projects that the board's all going to work on at once. In the pipeline, I should also mention, by the way, that on post-implementation reviews, as I said, we're doing the fair value measurement one at the moment. The next batch that are planned are covering the consolidation standards, IFRS 10, IFRS 11, and IFRS 12. And as we think about pipeline projects, we'll also be thinking about when we should start up that post-implementation review. Finally, I just wanted to mention wider corporate reporting, because at the moment that is not listed on the active agenda. It's not a project. We haven't had a project proposal to add it to the agenda. It's not sitting in the pipeline at the moment. The board is likely to discuss that, I think, at its November meeting. At that stage, we might see some move in the status of that project. What I'll do is maybe pass over to Henry, and we'll take any questions or comments at the end.
Thanks, Peter. So if I could pick up on the implementation activities that we just briefly summarized in the paper for you. Of course, you'll see some of these activities relate to IFRS 17, and as you can imagine, given what Hans has just said about that standard, effectively the work supporting IFRS 17 is going to be a sort of a significant work stream for us over the next few years, and we are devoting quite a lot of sort of resource to this. And Joanna Yeo tomorrow is going to come and talk to you about those activities and about the transition resource group that we've established for IFRS 17 as well. So you'll get to hear a little bit more about those activities. What I also would just like to highlight on these list of activities, because it's not actually listed here because it's a very recent one, is another webcast that we've just posted on the website relating to disclosures in IFRS 9. And I just highlight it, it's because actually the importance of disclosures in the new standards is something that we've really been pushing as a theme in various implementation events. And the message in this webcast very much is don't overlook the disclosures in IFRS 9, as with all of the other major new standards. They're a very important part of the package. What I thought I would just like to briefly highlight, though, was really to draw attention to the work that we've been doing, if you like, on communications around these activities supporting implementation, because you'll remember that in April we actually had a discussion about this at the Advisory Council meeting, and you provided us with some helpful advice, and obviously we've been trying to act on that advice. So I just wanted to highlight some of the things that we have been doing in this area. So I think the first thing I wanted to highlight is that as part of our major website relaunch, which hopefully you've seen and happened in June, we actually sort of took the opportunity to create a supporting implementation section. It's one of the major sections in the new website. So it's just like one click away from the homepage. And I think that prominence sort of reflects, or more appropriately, if you like, reflects actually how the board sees this work now. And we've used the opportunity with the new website to better explain kind of what we're doing and how we're supporting stakeholders with implementation activities. And I think in particular, and this is what really came out of the Advisory Council discussion, I think, was we've been trying to better explain what the Interpretations Committee does and how it sort of supports stakeholders applying the standards and how that fits in to the other work that the board does supporting the standards. And I think what we're really trying to get over and explain is that the Interpretations Committee, despite being called the Interpretations Committee, does much more than just issue interpretations. That's not actually the core output, if you like, from the Interpretations Committee, because, in fact, the way that it largely deals and responds to and addresses the questions that it gets about the application of our standards is through agenda decisions. And so we're also really trying to promote these agenda decisions and explain they're very much more than just the Interpretations Committee saying they got a question in and they decided standard setting wasn't necessary. They are actually a very valuable source of explanatory information about how to apply our standards. So I guess we're really sort of, as I said, promoting these agenda decisions and making sure that people really understand that we see them as being a very valuable tool, and the Interpretations Committee does too, in supporting the standards in a principle-based environment. And we're really trying to get rid of that label that we've often called them in the past, the rejection notices, because it just totally conveys the wrong notion. The other bit about the new website is that it basically brings together in one home all of the resources that we have developed over the years and continue to develop supporting the standards. So you can now go, say, to an IFRS 9 page, click on that page, and you'll see all of the materials from the TRG we had on impairment, any webinars we've produced, any articles, and also we're using that as a place to post the agenda decisions. So it's another place of getting the agenda decisions accessible to the marketplace. More recently, we published this leaflet that I hope you've all got a copy of on your table. And it's all really about supporting RFS standards. And again, the idea here is to explain what we're doing and how everything fits together, and again, explain the work of the Interpretations Committee. And we're obviously pushing this around the various events and conferences that we go to. And the other thing I would just highlight, just on this theme of communications, is that we also very recently posted a short video on our website. It's a 3.5-minute video. It stars Sue Lloyd, obviously, as the chairman of the Interpretations Committee, and it also has two members of the Interpretations Committee. But I think it's a really good introduction to what does the committee do and how does it respond to the questions that it gets in. So if you haven't seen that and are interested, I encourage you to watch it. But also, if you could, if you're ever talking about the work that we do, if you could highlight these things, we'd be very grateful. And I think just lastly, just to highlight a couple of specific projects, perhaps. The first was just to highlight that last week we published a narrow scope amendment to RFS 9, deals with the classification of prepayable financial assets with negative compensation. And so this amendment is designed to enable companies to measure some prepayable financial assets at amortized cost, rather than at fair value through P&L, which would have been otherwise the case. And I think it's just highlighted, it's a good example of us hearing a question during this implementation period and effectively coming through the Interpretations Committee and the board seeking to address the concerns quickly and efficiently, bearing in mind the effective date of RFS 9 was fast approaching. So we issued it last week. It has an effective date 1 year after RFS 9, but it allows early application so people can apply it for the first time when they first apply RFS 9 as well. And then lastly, I just wanted to highlight a project. It's on page 6 in the list of projects, and I'm highlighting it both because it's quite new. The board only really started this one in June, and it's the one accounting policy changes. But also because I think it's a good example of a practical project that we're undertaking just to try and make the overall system work better. Because what it's designed to do, it's really designed to make it easier for companies who want to improve their accounting by reflecting the decisions from the Interpretations Committee. And so the challenge that companies face at the moment is if they want to change or need to change their accounting policies as a result of something the Interpretations Committee has said in an agenda decision, then effectively that's a voluntary accounting policy change, and under IS 8 they need to apply it fully retrospectively unless that's impracticable, and that's a very high hurdle. And so the purpose of this amendment is basically to bring in a sort of a cost-benefit threshold test that will just ease the path, it'll lower that threshold, and means that it should make it easier in some of these cases where full retrospective can be difficult for companies to adopt new accounting policies and improve their accounting to reflect the latest thinking from the Interpretations Committee. So I think it's just an interesting project. I highlight it, and we expect to issue an exposure draft early next year. So I think that's all we wanted to say. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Hans, Peter, and Henry. And Henry, in one of his last comments that he made, reminded me, and I thought I should remind all of us, that one of the reasons, or I think one of the key reasons, that we are listening to this update from Hans, Peter, and Henry is not for our own education and edification, which are very important, but in fact for us to highlight these things, for us to go out in terms of our secondary objective of being advisory council members, and in our home jurisdictions talking about the things that the ISB are doing, so that we are taking those things and being able to highlight those in our jurisdictions with some knowledge firsthand from these guys about what they're doing. Yes, it's nice to learn at the same time, but that's not the key objective here. So thank you, Henry, for highlighting and reminding us of that. So on that note, is there any clarification from anybody of from the three of them around things that is going to help us to understand more around some of these issues so that we can talk about them in our own respective organisations or jurisdictions. John.
Yeah, we're bringing a paper to the board actually this month to deal with a couple of issues that came up in the drafting. But we hope that's the last of what we discover during the drafting. So.
And Garth?
Just a question to Peter to clarify business combinations under common control. From discussions that have occurred here previously, it's clear that different areas of the world have different needs for this. For some countries, this might largely be involving IPOs, but in my jurisdiction, we've had a request for many years in relation to companies, unlisted companies that are audited, but still use IFRS. And so the question is this narrow scope, in particularly in relation to IPOs, or is it going to be full scope?
We're going to be discussing scope with the board this month, actually. But at this stage, we're envisaging that it will be both. It wouldn't necessarily be limited, but that's subject to discussion with the board.
Hidetaki.
Also, I would like to say one quick comment, actually, regarding to the goodwill accounting, actually. Well, I'm sure that the Accounting Standard Board of Japan proposed that the goodwill amortization should be considered in this context. So, well, I would ask you to discuss seriously this issue at the board. That's it.
It is part of the package of issues that the board is discussing.
Thank you.
Paul.
Thanks, Joanna. It's just a general comment on the pipeline. I think you may do yourself more of a service if there was some indication publicly as to when these particular projects may or may not come on board, because I think 2017 to 21 is quite a, you know, four-year period. And if I pick on the extractive activities, which obviously would be of significance and on the agenda for people in that industry, even if it was a statement that likely not to be looked at till 2021 or whatever, I just think from a PR point of view, it might give a bit more positive spin as opposed to the view maybe they're just sitting there and maybe they'll be picked up or not. So just a general comment.
Yeah, we're certainly very conscious of that, and that's something we've been bearing in mind. I think what we didn't want to do was forecast a kind of five-year plan of what the sequence would be, because the world inevitably changes over that time, and the sequencing would probably need to change as well. But we'll certainly look at that again.
Any other comments or questions? No? In which case, I think I'm right in saying that we now have a break.